have accumulated a small delay. On the agenda, we have an important debate today concerning the long-range development strategic plan of GNR. And we will hear reports from all laboratories. The first one is Dmitry Naumov from the Zhelepov laboratory. Please.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. So I am honored to present the strategic plan on the long-term development of Joint Institute for Nuclear Research in the field of particle physics and astrophysics on behalf of the committee. The composition of the committee is as follows. So these are photos and names. And this committee was working on this document during 1 year. And we had about 40 email exchange and 3 personal meetings. And my plan for the next 20 years in just 15 minutes of this talk is as follows. First, I will briefly report to you major results. This is kind of a personal opinion, if you want, in the particle physics. And then I will present about major challenges in physics. And then there will be 2 plans. One is a midterm plan until 2030, and then a long-term strategy. And finally, we want to say about the expertise we are going to develop here in our laboratory and why work with us might be attractive to other members and other fellows from other countries. So the major results, I've just mentioned briefly only a few of them. There are many. First is the discovery of geoneutrinos, which are produced inside of the Earth in the mantle and crust. And this discovery was made jointly by Kemland experiment in Japan and by Barrichino experiment, in which GNR played a leading role. And this nice picture shows you a reconstruction of how actually our Earth looks like inside. So it's not at all spherical ball, so it's actually contains 2 continents, very asymmetric inside. And I think that working in terms of geoneutrinos, one can gain more information about also the structure of the Earth. Certainly this structure is obtained not with geoneutrinos, but with seismic waves. Then another major discovery was a Higgs boson discovery. There are many, many countries actually participating in this discovery, but I would just like to mention that GNR and our laboratory and the laboratory of high energy physics on the other campus made a really decisive contribution to this experiment. Just I will mention about only hardware stuff. So the half of the hadronic colorimeter was made by our laboratory, muon system, a quarter of that also by our laboratory. Then the electromagnetic colorimeter design electronics radiation test was done by laboratory of high energy physics. Transition radiation tubes tracking system design and assembling also was done by Laboratory of High Energy Physics, or GNR. Magnetic system, the design of that was done by our laboratory, Zhelepov Laboratory of Nuclear Problems. And we participated basically in every aspect of assembling and commissioning of the ATLAS experiment. And also in calibrations, data analysis, maintenance, and so on. So I think it's fair enough to say that GNR really played the leading role in this experiment and can fairly share the glory of Higgs boson discovery. Another important issue is related to neutrino physics and the discovery of neutrino oscillations and non-zero value of theta-13 lepton mixing angle with Diabe experiment, in which our institute also made a very significant contribution, both in terms of hardware. It was produced a wavelength shifter for liquid scintillator to make the liquid scintillator sensitive to the light, which photomultipliers can see, and also for the data analysis. Just an example, 2016 result of Diabe was based on Dubna analysis. So Dubna played here a leading role. And this was acknowledged actually by the community. As you might know, the breakthrough prize in fundamental physics of 2016 was given to 5 collaborations, including some fellows from our institute, and these fellows are working in Diabe, T2K, and Kempland experiment, and this was done essentially for the discovery of neutrino oscillations. What are the major particle physics challenges? So people are looking basically for the physics beyond the standard model, which include search for properties of the Higgs boson, beyond the standard model search for flavor violation, matter-antimatter asymmetry of the universe, dark matter of the universe, and dark energy of the universe. So these are crucial questions in particle physics which do not have yet an answer. And another aspect which is not related directly to particle physics, but in some part, is the universe evolution, which would include the sources of ultra-high energy neutrino and gammas, and new emergent field known like multi-messenger astronomy. Relict neutrino observation is really a tough topic to be touched. And diffusive neutrino observation, diffusive neutrino, these are those which are produced by supernova explosions during billions of years in the past. And a new instrument for touching the universe is the gravitational waves detection. I believe that this is now becomes very, very important candle. Therefore, the midterm plan till 2030 is the following. We continuing to pursue our investigation with ATLAS, and there are two phases. Phase one, in which we are going to install 32 quadrupoles of the new small wheel and develop CMOS electronics for liquid argon colorimeter and performing tests and so on, and work on the tile colorimeter, commissioning and tests. This amounts to about 0.1 mega Swiss francs. And for the phase two, there is a larger program, so it's development of TDAC, electronics, pre-amplifier shaper, and front-end cards, and signal processor from liquid argon colorimeter, LV services for tile colorimeter, for the muon system, RPC chambers, front-end electronics, gas system, and power system, and HGTD also. As for the Juno experiment, which we select as one of the major experiments in which we invest money. So this is going to be a huge detector of really new generation, which will be composed of 20,000 tons of liquid scintillator. Its diameter is about 40 meters, so it's larger than a building of 14 floors. So no human ever built such a detector before. And this detector will be filled with liquid scintillator in which neutrinos will produce light detectable by photomultipliers. And it will have a tremendous amount of photomultipliers, 20,000 of large photomultipliers of 50 centimeters each, and 18,000 small photomultipliers. And GNR is going to power Juno. So we are going to, we are actually producing now in the production phase the high voltage units for all these photomultipliers for 20K of large PMT and 18K for small PMTs. And this includes the complete design of the high voltage units, production, test, calibration, and installation. So this is our major contribution, one of the major contributions to this experiment, which amounts to about 2 million of USD. Another is Muon Veto. This is refurbished from the old OPERA experiment, and now a redesign is made, and we are doing also tests and calibrations and installation, so it's amount to about roughly $1.25 million. In the PMT test, we developed a brand new scanning station, and our experts are the main experts in the collaboration which control the PMT test, because you must be sure that every PMT amount of this 40,000 roughly satisfies the very tough physics requirements of this experiment. And I did not mention that physics requirements is that the Juno experiment has to measure energy with a precision better than 3% at 1 MeV of energy release. So no one ever achieved this precision so far. And recently the collaboration decided to build a second detector called Tau, which you can also think about like a near detector. And this near detector will be placed nearby a nuclear plant to measure very, very accurately with a precision even better, like 1.5% energy resolution than Juno itself. And this will help us to really be very much sure about the flux of antineutrinos from nuclear reactors. And for that, we are developing a system for silicon photomultiplier and methods and calibrations. And this amounts to $1 megadollars, and in total this is $4.35 megadollars being spent for these hardware contributions, which allows me to say that GNR is the major collaborator in Juno. But this is not yet all. We are also building a computer farm here at Laboratory of Information Technology, as was advertised by our director, in which we are going to invest several millions USD in the next years, because the amount of data is really huge which is going from this detector. And with Juno, before 2030, we are going to determine the mass hierarchy of neutrino with a precision of 3 or 4 standard deviations and measure the lepton mixing better than in the quark sector. So this is the first time when this accuracy will be achieved. And we'll obtain the largest data set of geoneutrinos ever, and we'll measure solar neutrinos as well with unprecedented precision, including scattering on electrons. And if we are lucky, nobody knows if we are, but if supernova happens nearby, then we'll see this with unprecedented precision, about 10,000 of supernova events. So far, the statistics includes about 20 events. And we're also very sensitive to proton decay, diffused supernova neutrinos, and much more. So this is really a very rich experiment in terms of physics. Baikal GVD, which is our flagship experiment in neutrino program, the idea is that we are going to build a three-dimensional array of photomultiplier sensors, which will cover 0.4 cubic kilometer by 2021. And right now, it's already a quarter of cubic kilometer. It is already the largest detector in the northern hemisphere. And the phase two of this detector is by 2027, we are going to have 1.5 cubic kilometers. And this detector will have an unprecedented precision in terms of angular reconstruction, which will allow us to reconstruct the directions of neutrinos, of ultra-high energies, and probably identify the sources. This is the flagship experiment of GNR. And we are doing here everything together with our collaborators from Moscow, INR, and other universities, including member states of GNR. So it's a growing collaboration. Now it has about 65 scientists and engineers. I think soon it will be much more. So actually, this is really a homemade experiment. We're doing actually everything here. GNR plays the leading role here. So this picture shows you one of the facilities which is producing photomultiplier, the spheres containing the photomultipliers. And the idea, as I mentioned, is to identify the sources. So this is the physical output of this experiment. In terms of other physics, we are pursuing dark side and Edelweiss experiments with different technologies.
Excuse me, what is the budget?
For the Baikal? It's about 3 million USD for one cluster, including 1 million of USD roughly for installation campaign. So next year we are planning to install, it depends on our budget. We had in mind to install 2 more clusters and construct 1 more cluster. This is costing something about 10 million because this is 3 clusters plus 1 million for the installation. So it's really very simple counting. And NOVA experiment is a currently running experiment which is going to determine mass ordering and CP violation, and we are very actively participating in that. Kalinin power plant has 3 to 4 experiments looking for magnetic moments, coherent scattering of neutrino over germanium nucleus and sterile neutrino search. Taiga experiment is an experiment in the Siberia. Geographically, it is nearby to Baikal, just more in the south. It is looking for the sources of gammas. Probably these sources are the same as producing ultra-high energies neutrinos. So these are active galactic nuclei. We don't know yet the sources. But this is an experiment in which we are also very actively participating. And neutrinoless double beta decay experiments like Gerda, Supernemo are also with us. So by stars here, I mentioned experiments which are home experiments of JNR. For the long-term plan, well...
Sorry, same question.
You started
with two experiments making 3.5 and 4.5 million, and then you are quiet. What are the budgets?
Oh, can you please repeat the question? What is our budget? What is their budget? This is the question. Okay. All right. So budget for
not in detail. Just how much is the rest?
I think all the rest in neutrino experiments, including Taiga experiments, is less than $1 million. Yes. So for the long-term plan after 2030, we are looking for the possibility how we are going to emerge after NOAA. Either this will be DOON, just a minute, experiment in which we are already doing some R&D, small-scale R&D, or hyper-Kamiokande. This, and the activity there and there is yet to be determined. Certainly Baikal JVD will continue. Juno will run for 20 or 30 years from now. Atlas high luminosity as well. And I think personally that we have to think carefully about gravitational waves interferometers. This is a really very interesting source of information. We can either join LIGO Virgo or build up own detector in Dubna. And expertise to develop here, we are, I think, lacking expertise in...
I kindly remind you that we should stick to the time.
Thank you. This is just a couple of slides. So it's application-specific integrated circuits, FPGA electronics, robotics, quantum computing, and general relativity and gravitational interferometer, project management, and we have to follow modern technologies. So this is the attractiveness of JNR. We have a world-class neutrino physics and expertise, top-level in detection technologies, new technologies, mechanical workshop with modern machine, including 5D numerical machines, excellent engineers and modern equipped labs, world-class ultra-cold technologies, and unique world-class home experiments like Baikal, Kalinin, and Taiga, and young, dynamic, and open-minded team. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. The discussions will be at the end of all the presentations, so please hold your questions to the end. I would like to address all the following speakers, asking them to stick strictly to the time and also to stress the strategic aspect of their presentation and what is expected at the end. That will clarify a lot of possible questions.
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt you. I do not believe it's a good idea to have questions completely at the end, because the hot questions come when you have presentation, and then we can discuss. Okay, it's just a remark.
Okay.
Proceed like you want, but okay.
So then, please stick to the essence of the presentation, and then we will suppress the discussions at the end if you prefer to have the discussions after the presentations.
Okay, just because I have the microphone, I have a question to know to Dmitry. Do they suggest to abandon CMS participation?
No.
But you didn't mention anything. Nothing about high luminosity LHC, nothing about FCC, nothing. Okay.
Everything I said about Atlas should be equally well to CMS.
So then just say it. No? Why should I do that?
I have a different reason. The speaker
Sydney, use the microphone, please.
Okay. So, in your opinion, where GNR, in all the presentation you have made on the projects, where GNR is playing a leading role? I would like to see where GNR, in your opinion, of course, is playing a very essential role in all these collaborations.
Well, first of all, Baikal GVD, this is the apparently the leading role of GNR, Baikal GVD. Also, Juno, we are playing there, not the 100% leading role. I mean, also China is a great partner, but among other partners in Europe, I think we are the leading, the major contributor there. And as I mentioned to you, in Atlas, for example, we had a contribution from quarter to one half of the detector, so I think it's fair to say that this is leading. And so in, also in other experiments. You're welcome.
Thank you for your... Where you are?
Disappeared.
Yep.
Over there.
No more here. It was I was looking for the themes and for the expenditures for that, but my question was in such a way that how it is contributed by the human resources. What are the partners and how it is widely spread for the cooperation when GINR is playing the main role in majority of these projects, but who are the another partners for that?
I'm very sorry, I did not expect that you were asking me. Could you please repeat the question?
Who are the partners? How it is,
what are the partners?
From the point of view of financing, but from the human resources.
Oh. So we are collaborating with many, many partners in every experiment. For example, in Baikal, we have collaborators from INR, as I mentioned, is the major collaborator, actually the pioneer of the field, INR. So we just joined them and learning from them. And now, thanks to our larger resources, becoming the major collaborator, but actually they are the most important in terms of history and now also. And also for the Baikal, we have collaborators from Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia. These are member states of GNR. With Atlas, I think you know, this is the worldwide community. We are collaborating with everyone. So what else to mention? In Taiga, the major collaborators are now Germans who moved parts of their detectors from Germany, from Karlsruhe, and they are very actively participating there in Siberia. If you have any specific experiment in mind, I will tell you who are the partners.
Okay, I'm happy for that, but thank you for the answer. I think that a lot of these experiments are typical for the participation of universities, and it is the moment when it is possible to attract the collaboration with the different universities to the GNR.
I apologize to our... Just a second. I apologize to our spokesperson or the chairman of this session, but this is a very important thing which you mentioned, and I completely forgot to say about that. Actually, we are very, very, very much open to any collaborators to join us, and we have free postdocs position open thanks to our directorate with good salaries for Baikal experiment and Baikal plus June experiment. So please convey this message to your countries that we are really looking for we're actually lacking manpower. Yeah. I personally, deputy director, have to write a C++.
Michel,
a very short question. You did not mention the future plans for with Kalinin reactor. This was considered also as a flagship, no?
Yes. I think I mentioned Kalinin power plant. Are you asking about this, right?
But in passing only, you mentioned it. Do you have long-term plans with Kalinin?
We are going to pursue further this because we have a very unique position there.
Yes.
Yes, which is, I think, no one in the world has. So we installed our detectors just underneath the nuclear reactors, and we have good relationships with Atomic Agency of Russia. And we are going to pursue certainly
that,
yes. I think you are aware, and if not, I will tell you, that one of the leaders of these experiments, Slava Yegorov, unfortunately passed away.
I don't know.
Yes, and so we are still kind of a little bit stuck from this, because certainly he was the leading person in these experiments. But I am sure we'll recover, and quite soon you will hear about news from them.
Okay. Thank you. I think that we stop here. We move to the next speaker. Romain, please start your presentation.
Okay.
Please keep in mind strategy and what is expected at the end, and consider that you should leave some space for the questions at the end of your talk. So try to compress a little bit. Go on.
Okay, so I'll be reporting about the work of the relativistic heavy ion and spin physics group, and this is not... So nothing will be said about the participation of our lab in high energy frontier. We expected that this should be covered by the previous group, but they didn't, in fact. So this is our the list of participants. So, and I'm very thankful to all of those who contributed a lot in the work of this subgroup. And come on. Yeah. So first, we worked of about half a year or more, maybe a full year. The result of our work is on the dedicated Intego page. If you'd like to see what is there, please ask me for the password. But there is a detailed strategy for development of the Laboratory of High Energy Physics. And at the end, we have produced a concise document, about 8 pages, that deals with the potential and feasibility of the research directions that are worth to pursue in the following 10 to 20 years. And of course, so our first priority for the next decade, this is very obvious, is the NICA scientific program with its two pillars, heavy ions, say heavy ion collisions, and collisions of transversely and longitudinally polarized protons and deuterons. Deuterons are the unique for our lab and unique for the world. There is no accelerator anymore that could accelerate polarized deuterons. So, NICA scientific program. First thing is investigation of hot and dense baryonic matter. You know that that has been presented several times, but just we are unique in this plot with our interaction rate and energy in the region where the highest baryonic, net baryonic density is expected. So the only competitor is FAIR, but CIS 350 is questionable, so here his appearance on the plot. So we are in very good position to do a first-class heavy ion physics. Then the second pillar is study of nuclear spin structure and polarization phenomena. You read what it is there. So we hope to have polarized beams that you could, in such a way that you could collide particles with different orientations of the polarization and with the unprecedented, very good luminosity, in fact. And what we are going to study there, this is the spin structure of the nucleon. This is our main goal. There are 8 first order parton distribution functions that could be measured in one single experiment, namely the spin physics detector experiment. So the third pillar, the third statement in our strategy is that the NICA facility should be open for not only the GINER, but also members, state scientists but also to the international scientific community at large. This is an important statement. And our main statement is that the full potential of NICA should be developed in the next 25-30 years, but we should not forget that the facilities get old and they need upgrade, especially Nucleotron and other devices we plan to put there, for example, the superconducting magnetic energy storage device and so on. So those are plans for more or less near future. So further lines of development of the NICA complex, we have identified four directions that are scientifically promising and we think feasible. First, this is to upgrading of the NICA complex to obtain asymmetric heavy ion collisions, so to collide ions with different atomic number. For example, protons and carbon ions, or protons and gold, or deuterons and protons, and so on. And then, next thing is feasibility study for electron accelerator of a few GeV. This is important thing. And that will give us two things. One is to collide electrons with heavy ions, and the second, a possibility to create a high-energy photon beam, for example, by backward Compton scattering, and that will make our facility unique in the world. And also, at the last but not least, about the search for the proton and deuteron electric dipole momenta, using the NICA rings for that. That could be also done, we believe. Then, a bit in some detail here. So the new electron accelerator will give possibility to collide protons and electrons and heavy ions, and also with polarized beam of protons and deuterons, and that opens an entirely new field of research. Those polarized beams offer the possibility to study crucial aspects of hadronic and nuclear structure. Especially polarized beams of deuterons will be unique in our facility, and they give access to a rich set of functions, distribution functions that has not been yet measured, but they could be measured with such a facility. And also comparison of these proton-proton, electron-proton, and electron-ion data would be a very interesting thing to do. Now, the same could be said about the gamma-proton beams. For example, interactions, so study there could shed light on the J-psi and epsilon formation at threshold, and also another interesting things that could be pursued when the coupling constant is large here. This is the electromagnetic coupling constant, and also that could move us further to the next two leading order and even more expansions on terms of expansion of the perturbation of the interaction amplitude. So the last thing about the proton and deuteron EDM, so the idea is to transform the NICA, the two rings, into H-shape accelerator and use so-called spin transparency mode. There are feasibility study for such kind of mode and such to use the magnetic ring for such kind of measurements at COSI, and we will follow the development there with great interest. So, traditionally, the heavy ion program includes participation in the experiments at accelerators abroad, CERN, BNL, DESI, GSI, and the benefit here, so the key factor is the mutual benefit and also the discovery potential of that experiments, and if whether we, the GNR researchers, have leading role in this experiment. So not every experiment and not in every international center could have or should have participation from GINAR. We should be very selective there and very precise in deciding where to spend money. And also participation at CERN experiment is important, and we think this is of strategic importance, and also STAR-RETRIC and FAIR, of course. And the last thing is that we should follow closely and participate in the program of building of electron-ion collider somewhere in states in the near future. So, of course, the general strategy of this institute should be linked closely to the updated European strategy for particle physics. My last slide is about the stuff that we foresee to work on NICA only, not in the lab, but on in the NICA facility, about 1,000 people from the Laboratory of High Energy Physics, about 700 people from 700 researchers from Russian institutes and from other countries, maybe 800-900 people. Thank you for your attention. When 2030 comes, we hopefully will be not in the position of this guy or lady, because we have a strategy. Thanks.
Thank you.
I think I managed to put that in less than 15 minutes.
Thank you, Roman. I have a question. You mentioned gamma P collisions.
Yeah.
How do you want to obtain the gamma beam? What is the energy and what are the expected densities?
So this is a matter of future design study, of course. But there are two methods now invisible, so that could be applied for obtaining gamma beam. This is backward quantum scattering on high-intensity electron beam. You direct high-intensity laser, and then you get backward scattering gammas. And so it's here. And the energy is about half of the energy of the electrons. And another way is just to use synchrotron radiation from that electron beams.
Thank you. Other questions, please? Faisal.
If I remember, we heard the presentation. And clearly, we all heard that NICA is a priority. So my question is,
remove your finger from the... Okay.
No. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Go. So the question is, how could you conciliate NICA being a priority, building it, add to it this electron-ion or electron-proton collider, and keep all the other experiment online with the same implication?
Okay.
But even though you showed some evolution of the human resources, I'm wondering whether it is. Is it really realistic to do so?
Okay, first, up to 2030, we think so the laboratory and the efforts should be concentrated on fulfilling the NICA program up to 2030 and maybe a bit beyond. And that time, I think the construction will be already fully done, and we will have maybe 5-7 years for just research there. And then when resources appear, new resources, we could start thinking about building new accelerator, for example, electron accelerator there, and other developments that I just mentioned. Now we have a very intense budget and consume half of the budget for construction of this institute, I think. But after we finish NICA, so those will be, we will need money only for operation of the facility, and the rest that will be freed from the budget could be used from something new.
Horst first.
And
sorry, I couldn't.
You are interrupting your own voice. That's good, so I can talk.
what? I was asking the other experiment. Apparently, will continue. COMPASS, FAIR, many others.
In FAIR, we will participate. COMPASS now is in transition state. They have program for the next 2-3 years to take data, but nothing is clear after that. And also I would say that we identified four directions, but when we come to 2030, for example, we will see what of that would remain interesting in the field. And there is no, we do not say that we should follow all these four directions.
You said it's straightforward to do the 8. So that means you want to drop the collider mode once you do the 8?
We need, yeah. So there is
drop the collider mode. You can no longer do collider mode.
No. With relatively modest additions, those two rings could be transformed into an 8-shape accelerator. And when you remove that additional equipment, it will stay collider mode. Collider too. This is our understanding. Not completely destroy the collider mode. That would not be wise.
And the electron machine, you are thinking about energy recovery, Linac, or what?
Energy a few giga electron volts.
No, I'm asking whether you think about energy recovery, Linac, or what are you talking about?
At giga electron volt, you don't speak about recovery, Linac. It's too high energy.
This has not been specified and not discussed.
What sort of parameters do you have in mind when I talk about electron, proton, electron, ion machine, and also gamma photon, gamma proton, gamma ion machine, and how that compares to existing or previous machines and plans for the future?
Very valid question, but I don't have in my mind any parameters now, and this should be subject of dedicated, not very big, but design study. And then if we think, we all think this is worthy to follow, so parameters will appear. I don't have an answer to that now.
May I address you one questions which is not about physics. Do you have a projection of the prices that are expected for the discontinuation till 2030?
Beyond 2030?
No.
But up to 2030, everything is more or less clear, and it is within the budget of this institute.
Say it up to 2030. That also will be very informative, I'd say. Sydney.
Yeah, it's not a question, sorry, just a comment. I think that it's very nice that you presented the various directions where you want to go. To help you and us, it would be very nice as soon as possible to have a timeline of this. Even 2030 for this kind of development is tomorrow, right? I mean, we all know that. So I think it would be nice to have a timeline. And also, from my own point of view, this electron-ion collider to produce photons, high-energy photons, it looks interesting, rather, let's say, new in the sense of the energy regime of the photons. So to have some idea what physics you want to do would be nice, right? Because this is the regime of many hundred MeV gammas, I guess, or I don't know.
A few GeV.
2 GeV gamma. So this is really, to my knowledge, I don't think there is a beam like that anywhere. So it would be nice to know what is the goal of the physics, right?
You better, because it's $1 billion.
I'm just talking about money, okay? Sorry.
Just a comment. As I remember, such a reverse Compton scattering source was built in Brookhaven in 70s or 80s, and they produced their the photons with the energies, energies around 2 GeV, as I remember. Of course, there is an advantage that if this laser laser photons are polarized, and also these high energy gamma rays are polarized, but I don't remember too much about that. But just to remind you that such a system or source was already built.
Where it was?
In Brookhaven in 70s or 80s.
Rather brief program in those.
Only, yes, thank you. Only very short, maybe a remark, not a question. I agree with Sydney that 2030, it is tomorrow, not for me, but for GINR. It is the first. The second is that it is necessary to keep the open access for all devices that are built here. It is the conditio sine qua non, and it is impossible to arrange it without that. On the other hand, the partners are coming here with not only with the manpower, but with ideas. And it is necessary to remember to have the space for this realization, not for their brave profit, but for GINR. That means because the devices remain to be the GINR devices.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, we think about that.
Okay, so we are in delay, so I will stop the discussions now. Thank you, Roman. We move on to Alexander Karpov for Pleuro Laboratory.
Good morning, everyone. So the topic of the group which we work on, that was nuclear physics at low and intermediate energies, including atomic physics, nuclear chemistry, and astrophysics. This work is mainly based at GNR on the activity of the Fluorov Laboratory of Nuclear Reactions, and we see that this field can be split in three topics: synthesis and properties of super heavy elements, study of exotic nuclei, and nuclear reactions induced by heavy ions. The local working group look like this. Group of experts, which was approved by scientific council, is also shown. During this couple of years, we have a number of meetings. Meetings for heavy and super heavy elements are shown here. Next one will be in December of this year in Japan. That will be the fourth international symposium on super heavy elements, just before closing of the international year of the periodic table. Then we had, of course, a number of meetings for light exotic nuclear research. And again, the last one was in August, and the umbrella of a big conference, international conference on new frontiers in physics in Greece. When we look to plan of our laboratory, we see that these three topics which I mentioned are very good, can be shared between three big accelerators which we have in the laboratory. So in future, we see that mainly heavy and super heavy elements research will be mainly based on the super heavy elements factory. Then cyclotron U400M will work mainly on studying of light exotic nuclei, and U400 cyclotron after modernization will be mainly used for shorter experiments with concentration on studying of nuclear reactions. Of course, our future plans are based on our present plans, and for this 7 year in the field of instruments of basic facilities, we have the following plans. That is, first of all, commissioning and development of super heavy elements factory, modernization of U400 cyclotron, which should start in the mid of next year, and reconstruction of U400 cyclotron, which includes not only modernization of the cyclotron itself, but also a substantial enlargement of experimental area. And of course, development of experimental setup, that is continuous work and at any time. In the field of heavy and super heavy element, of course, basic facilities, I mentioned that is DC-280 at super heavy elements factory. I remind you that this cyclotron has a record parameters. So, for example, for calcium 48 intensity, it was already almost reached. That is 10 particle microamperes. That several times exceed everything that was reached up today in the world. Main task for this facility, of course, that is experiments where we expect extremely low cross sections. That is synthesis of new elements with beams of titanium and chromium. That is 119, 120, and beyond. Synthesis of new isotopes of super heavy elements. Search for rare decay modes of those elements, study of excitation function, etc. And experiments where we require high statistics which cannot be reached on the existing facility. That's spectroscopy studies and studying of chemical properties, mass measurements, and so on. At the moment, we have more or less clear situation with several setups. So first of all, gas field recoil separator 2, which will be mainly used for synthesis of new elements, new isotopes, studying of decay modes, and so on. It was commissioned, so now just this, in these days, tests of this separator is ongoing. Next separator, which will be also gas field separator, it will have dedicated construction, which is suitable for studying of decay proper of nuclear properties of super heavy elements and chemistry studies of super heavy elements. So it was manufactured already. You see this picture on the Sigma Phi site. We expect delivery of this separator by the end of this year and assembling in the next year. As a long-term plans, we see that we need specialized radiochemical complex of the first class, first of all, for manufacturing, remanufacturing, and development of the targets, which are required for the super heavy elements factory, but not only that. Then the ICR ion source on 28 gigahertz, it's also needed to increase variety of the beams which we may have on the super heavy elements factory up to uranium. But again, application of this ion source is much wider than only super heavy elements factory. And of course, development of experimental setups, which is not yet finished. We still have place to accommodate several more setups in this building, so it will be continued in the next decades. Our plans can be shown on this picture. So when we see already known nuclei, we remember that they're produced with a cross-section about 1 picobar. It means that a new facility, we may obtain this nuclei and these elements with in quantities of hundreds and maybe even thousands of atoms. And this opens a possibility to study of their properties. I mean, chemical and nuclear properties of these elements. When we speak about enlargement of known area of nuclear map, synthesis of new elements, first of all, going closer to the center of island of stability or in opposite direction, here we definitely will face with extremely low cross-section, and here, of course, super heavy elements factory that is the only facility which may do this job. In the field of light exotic nuclei, in the nearest decade at least, we think that U400M, a modernized accelerator, will be the basic facility. Again, I remind you that modernization we will start in the mid of next year and take 1.5 or 2 years. Basic setup or main setup for production of radioactive ion beams and study of their properties, that is Akulina 2. We have again some nearest plans for development of this separator, that is radio frequency kicker, which was already installed. You see the picture. That is, during the modernization of cyclotron, we have a plan to develop and install cryogenic target system, first of all for tritium, and of course development of detectors systems also going on. In the research, we always speak about studying of nuclei which are located on the borders of stability, neutron border of neutron stability and proton stability. And in this case, with U400M facility, we are limited to light part of the nuclear chart, let's say beyond the calcium. And in this region, we can obtain beams of radioactive ions with sufficient intensity to do experiments with them. In order to enlarge our possibility to go to the heavier nuclei, and in this place to also to have a possibility to reach borders of nuclear stability, we think that we should substitute in the future U400M cyclotron with a new one. And at the moment we consider several possibilities, and one of them is superconducting LINAC accelerator with the goals to have beams up to uranium with energy of about 100 MeV per nucleon and with intensity actually maximal possible. That is not yet defined, and that is many things should be discussed in this respect. In June of this year, Program Advisory Committee on Nuclear Physics of GNR considered a new project, construction of prototype of initial section of such accelerator, and a project was recommended for 2 years. And the main purpose of this project is to demonstrate or study feasibility of construction of such a machine, and in this case to prepare basic technical documents. In the field of nuclear reactions, again, the U400, after modernization, will be U400R cyclotron, will be used. As I said, we plan to substantially increase experimental areas, so new experimental hall will be constructed during these 7 years. And this will allow us to not only to place existing setups there, but we will have more space to develop and install new separators. For example, now we have idea to construct separator with working name STAR, and this will be dedicated separator for studying of nuclear reactions in very wide range of angles, with the possibility to detect and resolve not only light and medium mass nuclei, but also heavy and super heavy. And in this respect, it will be unique for our laboratory. So, summary of what I said. So in plants in the field of heavy and super heavy elements, we have development of experimental setups, of course, in the super heavy elements factory, realization of experimental program. I'm sure that it will take not 5, not 10, I mean 20 or even more years. Construction of radiochemical complex of the first class, ICR ion source on 28 gigahertz, of course upgrade of U400 cyclotron, develop setups mainly intended on study of nuclear reactions. In the field of light exotic nuclei, of course, it is experimental program which we going to realize on new Okulina 2 fragment separator, which was commissioned just 2 years ago. And of course, we just started with this separator, and to consider the feasibility of construction of a new driver accelerator for the radioactive beam research. Finally, even in approximately in the end of this 7 year, so we think that we will have about 18,000 hours of beam time annually on our three big machines, And this, of course, will give us a possibility not only to realize our experimental program, but also to open this facility, our facilities for external users. So that is all topics in one slide, and with this I want to thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Alexander. Let me start the questions with one very short, which refers to this LINAC 100. The main competitors will be FAIR and RIKEN.
Yes.
How do you stay in comparison with these two large facilities?
So at the moment, we're just in the beginning. Yeah, we just start to discuss what kind of accelerator we can build, how it fits our budget, and so on. So that's, at the moment, there are many, many questions. Of course, during this preparatory work, we should find our niche in, because you mentioned two of the, our competitors, but actually more of them in the world, and some of them very close to commissioning, some of them already started and under development and so on. So that is one of the main questions which we want to answer during several next years.
Okay, for the super heavies, I don't expect you'll have competition. Horst?
Yeah, we did analysis of the 100 MeV per nucleon LINAC for Tokai. And Ratzinger has a concept, and you can just, with a rule of thumb, say every MeV is a million. So the longer the guy is, actually then it becomes even more expensive because the distances become longer. So for Tokai, or for GSI, where we also discussed, remember, GSI builds a LINAC which injects in FAIR instead of the SIS-18. So budget number is on the order of 100 million. But that's not a problem. A problem is, of course, then you cannot do everything later. This is a focus project, not quite as big as NICA, but big. So that's fine.
Thank you. Some other questions? Sydney?
Yeah, thank you, Alex, for the presentation. One comment is that in the super heavy element new machine, high intensity, you mentioned a very heavy beam also with high intensities, like xenon and uranium and so on. I was surprised that you are not considering even you. Multi-nucleon transfer with that machine, which is possible in terms of energy and intensity, but of course needs some kind of spectrometer or something to do the physics. That's one comment.
I think specifically this field, first of all, requires some studies. And for that studies, I think you, for 100 cyclotrons, probably at this moment is better to make all this necessary research to and answer the question how this method is working or not. I believe that yes. And then when it will be already, I would say, more or less mass production. Yeah. So the super heavy elements factory, of course, that is probably the right place for that. But at the moment, we cannot accelerate uranium with this cyclotron. For that, we need a new iron source. And in the plan, it was planned to, just from the beginning, two iron sources. One is for light and medium mass nuclei up to xenon, say, and one another one is for heavier nuclei. So this iron source is under development.
Okay, so I just have a second comment in line with what Orts just say. So this 100 MeV LINAC heavy high intensity machine, high power machine, the world would be... In that part of the physics in the world, there will be a lot of people. Okay? I can spend a minute telling you which has all these people who are going in the same direction. So maybe one can open in a different direction, you know, original, and not going like FAIR, RIKEN, Korea, GANIL, what else?
Japan, cannot, okay? States, and so on. States, yeah, you are absolutely right.
Okay, so just a comment, okay? I know it's initial stage, but okay.
If there are no other questions, thank you again, Alexander, and we move on to the next speaker. We have another Alexander, Alexander Joffe.
So, thank you very much. So, I'm giving the presentation on the behalf of the working group number 5 on condensed matter neutron physics. Should I use this one in order to move it? Sorry. So, this is the people who are involved in this group, they are presenting quite a number of countries over the world, a number of neutron research centers. Most important research centers. That's important thing. The group is not only constituted from the people, from scientists, but also people from industry. So, what I have to press? Okay. So we have already 3 regular meetings. We're meeting on a semi-annual basis, starting from June 2018. And we also hold a workshop, international workshop on advances.
Try to speak to the microphone, please.
It's here. No. And we also hold the workshop, international workshop, on advances, ideas, and experiments for such a new source, what we're talking about, and which participation on 46 participants from Sweden, France, Germany, and other countries, and also who represented all leading European and Russian neutron centers. So what we're talking about, this is how that we would like to suggest to build a new advanced neutron source in Dubna, which would label it like DNS-4, naming it as a fourth reactor which will be built in Dubna. And this is a long-term strategy which is aiming to construct the world-leading neutron source engineer, and which will open unprecedented possibilities for scientists, for junior member states, and scientists from worldwide to carry out research in condensed matter physics, fundamental physics, chemistry, material, and life science. The project is extended over 2 strategic planning periods to 2036, when expecting the source will be built. And this is estimated construction cost, but more exact estimation will be done during the process, which is going now. I have a problem here. Okay, so neutron science has a critical application in many scientific fields, such like condensed matter physics, information technologies, fundamental physics, life science, and engineering. And this is just because of outstanding features of neutrons. It does not work really. Which some of them are mentioned here, and namely that the neutron scattering power is not monotonously dependent on the atomic mass. It has just a regular scattering. This has allowed us to see hydrogen, which is not visible for X-rays on the background of heavier atoms, compare this and this, but very well visible with neutrons. So we can find positions of hydrogen in, for example, biological molecules. And this does clearly distinguish between neighboring atoms in biology, especially nitrogen, carbon, and oxygen. And this allows us to refine structure of proteins, which is extremely important for the current drug design. Neutrons also have energies which are quite small, about the sum of energies, therefore they're not disturbing probe and not destroying the probe, which in contrast to the X-rays, which has energy about 6 orders of magnitude more, and they're also therefore much more sensitive to weak and slow atomic motions. And last not least, neutrons has azotopic contrast. It's a different scattering for hydrogen and deuterium, and therefore the exchange of hydrogen and deuterium biological molecules makes them different contrast and allows to see their structure. So, concerning the fundamental physics and the DNS-4, we'll deal with very cold neutrons, which has wavelengths from 20 to 100 angstrom. In this case, it will be studies of fundamental physics, like search for neutron, antineutron oscillation, neutron lifetime measurements, and so on, and also develop new technique for condensed and soft matter physics using the slow neutrons, like high-resolution neutron spin ahead techniques, high-resolution inelastic scattering, small angle scattering, and so on. This traditional field of fundamental physics is neutrons, auto-cold neutrons, which have been discovered in Dubna, on the way. And there are traditional research with UCNs, like Newton lifetime, and search for electrical dipole moment of the neutron. And also the development of such new techniques, like high-resolution neutron spectroscopy. So if we now, where we are, yeah? So if we look now for the European Lutheran landscape, let's say this time a year ago, we can see some a number of bright spots which in Lutheran sources spread over the Europe, and this is quite a nice picture. But if we look now, making projecting the look in 2036, we'll see that the center of Europe will be definitely depleted. The reason is the shutting down and phasing out of a number of aging reactors which are staying in the center of Europe, and this will definitely has the consequences. The consequences was analyzed by F3 group for neutron landscape, which came up to conclusion that it will result in an inevitable shortage of the neutron access, about factor of two in neutron instrument beam time, which will be which is available today, will be dropped in the year about 2024, and this certainly justifies clear need in a new neutron source. Our idea is to suggest a new source in Dubna, which will be staying somewhere here, and will in certain extent recover the gap what we're getting now, and we just will try to show what we're suggesting to do with this. So first of all, this will be not just another neutron source, it will be one of the best sources in the world. So it will be the pulse neutron source, when the peak neutron flux will be used instead of the mean neutron flux, which is the continuous reactors. All neutron sources built within the last two decades are actually pulse sources, and the reason for this is that proper neutron instrumentation allows a significant gain in the instrument performance of such sources. Last example is European Spallation Source, ESS, which is the most advanced neutron source in the world to be operational in 2024, which will provide such a long pulse, you can see here in comparison to pulses from other sources, and with proper instrumentation, we can use the whole neutrons emitted during this long pulse. Therefore, instruments at ESS will outperform similar instruments that today flagship source research reactor in Grenoble, Institut Laue-Langevin reactor, by factor 20 to 100. So it's an enormous breakthrough, and we definitely have to benchmark the new Dubna source against the ESS. So what we're going to suggest, we'd like also to suggest to build a long pulse neutron source. However, pulse is shorter than ESS by factor of 10, so 300 microseconds against 3 milliseconds, but with the same time with 10 times higher magnitude. It would mean that Dubna source will provide shorter neutron pulses, however containing the same amount of neutrons as the ESS. ESS pulse is long and is good for long, for lower resolution experiments with long instruments, but however for high resolution it requires a pulse shaping like this, which definitely resulted in the intensity losses. In the case of the Dubna, new Dubna source will have shorter peak like shown here, and it will be as good as ESS for low resolution experiments, but however much better for high resolution experiments. So how are we going to do it? We have for the moment two suggestions to alternative concept to do it. It's pulsed reactor and accelerated driven source, and I will shortly show what it's about. So pulsed reactor, it's actually evolution of the ideas which were used to build the current reactor IBER 2, and in this case the core will be split in two parts and reactivity modulator will rotate like a disk will rotate around it, so the reactor coming active critical only in this situation when the empty sector of reactivity modulator enters this core. Core will be made from neptunium 237, have the thermal power of 10 to 20 megawatt, and due to modified moderator placement geometry, the neutron flux density that we'll get over there will be about 10 to 14 neutrons per centimeter square per second, and this is our target value. The second approach, it's accelerator driven neutron source, actually spallation multiply, it's quite a nice idea also. Idea is that we would like to multiply the neutrons which will be obtained from the spallation reaction of proton beam, high energy proton beam on the rotating tungsten target, and multiply this neutron multiplication factor about 20 to 50. It means that we can get the same flux as the ESS, but using such an accelerator, however, with beam power will be much less than 5 megawatt of ESS. And this factor 20 to 50 will compensate the things. So there are some technical problems to be solved, for example, the stability of the proton accelerator on the operation of the booster, but we're just on the beginning of the way. And to solve these problems, we're cooperating with industry. This actually this is the leading Rosatom Institute for Reactor Development. so-called Delijar Research Development Institute, and we got already positive feedback when they evaluated the feasibility of the first part, the Sarbes 3 project, and even came up with a such kind of roadmap, which is hardly readable, but we made it more better readable. We can see different stages of this project, starting from the concept development, conceptual design. Somewhere here we have the investment justification, and then construction will go here, ending up around 36, commissioning will start in around 36. So in order to use all the neutrons that will come from the source, it's also quite important, not only important to get neutrons over there, but also to get them on the sample. We need special approaches to maximize the use of the emitted neutrons and also to bring them over there. If we look for expected gains in this case, and I would like to say that it's rather conservative estimates, the gain factor with respect to the today IBO2 reactor will be about 1 to 2, 3 orders of magnitude. So, of course, such sources should be built in combination with proper moderators, neutron delivery system and instruments, and this is exactly our plan to do in future. So, first of all, plans for 2023 for next strategic period. This is first part developed on final concept of this moderators, which are shown here. It's quite complicated things. We have group moderators with for high intensity instruments. We have low dimensional moderators for instruments which require high brilliance. And we have converters for very cold neutrons. And also studies, carry out studies for UCN and VCN. If we're looking for further things, then we have also design of neutron modern instruments. For this case, we develop Monte Carlo simulation procedures dedicated. They exist already today, but some of them has to be developed, and the idea is to optimize the neutron delivery systems to maximally use the emitted neutrons and optimize instruments in order to use delivered neutrons, so nothing should be wasted. This will be done by this use of quite complicated neutron optic, like ballistic, elliptic, and parabolic neutron guides, and also go to development of instrumentation in parallel with this already. And this is construction of new instruments, upgrade of the instruments, and design and the new testing of technologies of prototypes for DNS4 and IBO2. The idea is that two sources will be overlapped. So when the first new one will come operation, the old one should still be operative for another year, no gap. So, I think it's all, yeah? So I'm coming to conclusions and would like to say that systematic shortage of the neutron beam time in Europe certainly raises demand in construction of a neutron source. And we propose to build such source in Dubna. There are no proposals of such a kind in Europe or worldwide for the time being. And it hardly will be possible, I guess, because it's a time for the realization of such a project is allowed 20 years. So this source will be built like a combination of modern moderators, neutron guides, and instruments, and we promise to be one of the best in the world. It definitely will open a precedent possibilities for scientists from worldwide and gene member states for studies on fundamental physics, chemistry, material, and life science. Important thing that Frank Laboratory for Neutron Physics possesses very high competence in construction and operation of pulse neutron sources. They had that already will be sorted, they mentioned a pulse neutron source, and also the studies of cold with auto-cold neutron sources and neutron instrumentation, so this is the right place to do it. The competence is here. Another important point is that the lab is staffed by a large number of motivated young scientists who are really eager to, and engineers who are really eager to work on this new exciting project. It really will be quite important for them. And as I mentioned already, the planned start of operation of a new source will be in 26 or 27. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. May I open the question asking you about the energy spectrum? You apparently dropped completely the interest for the high energy neutrons.
So the neutrons what we are getting, so certainly what I mentioned, we have this moderate spectrum. Well, just let me go back a bit, it probably was quite quick. So from the neutron source we're definitely high energy neutrons, but we have some moderators. So when the neutrons are moderated and watered first, just to get some more ones with energy about 10 MeV, and after this we can make another moderators which will shift the spectrum, so-called cold moderators, on the cooling down of the spectrum, shifting them to areas of cold neutrons, very cold neutrons, outer cold neutrons. So each of them required to be dedicated moderate, in this case, this is optimized solution.
Yeah, thank you. Other questions, please? Faisal?
Thank you. Really, very interesting, really good way to plan the future. How the two options would compare, the reactor and the spallation, the accelerator-driven system, in terms of cost and and readiness? Apparently, you're given the same timeline for both options, 2037 or something. What about the price? How do you compare the cost of the two options?
So this is exactly the point. So for the moment, we're just making concept development of both of them, because we don't know which one will win. But somewhere in this area, when we go to conceptual design, we have to take a decision, which one will be better. Decision will be made on the point of view. This will be a suggestion from NICAD, of this institute. They have to tell us what they can build, because they are finally guys who will build this source, the Rosatom. And feasibility study, this is number one. Is it possible to do it? And for the moment, it seems to be it's possible. Then how technically it's complicated, one or another. And what are also important, the risk analysis. For example, what the question for us was about instability of the operation of accelerator on the work of the this multiplicative tag assembly. Because if we have just accelerator, there is a kind of thermal balance on it. You're heating and you're cooling. If something sudden you start stop to heat, because of neutron pulse, you're overcooling, and this some causes instability. This has to be analyzed.
Well, the cost-wise?
Cost-wise, it's more or less the same.
More the same. Thank you.
Other questions, please? Sydney.
In the accelerator-driven source, driven by accelerator.
Yes, yes.
I have a hard time to understand how this will be different from ESS.
Okay. The difference from the ESS actually not the spallation reaction. Spallation reaction is used not only, here it is. It's used not only ESS, it's also as SNS, it's a standard way now to produce neutrons. The trick here is actually is to have the to the assembly, like reactor around the spallation one. Therefore, you have less spallation neutrons, so you're reducing the power of neutron beam, you're drastically reducing all heating problem, because you have to rotate the sphere, you cool it down, and you're multiplying this after here. So this is quite a judicious idea, I would say.
Well, thank you. Other questions? I don't see. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Elena Nasonova from Radiation Biology Laboratory. Please.
Dear Chairman and the members of the Scientific Council, let me present you the strategy of radiobiological research for the period up to 2030, which was developed by the working group consists of the our laboratory leading scientists, the experts from Armenia, Poland, United States, Italy, and two Russian top experts in the field. The group was created in 2018, and the main discussions were at a visiting session of Bureau of the RAS Scientific Council on Radiobiology and at the conference Modern Problems of General and Space Radiobiology in Dubna last year. And recently, the final document was sent to the working GNR group. There are two main reasons why we work here. First of all, the accelerators of the heavy charge particles are the excellent tool to address the fundamental problems of the radiation biology and genetics. And second, due to the increasing use of the radiation in our life, two applied, main applied fields, the radiation tumor therapy and radiation protection, so it means risk estimation, are of the great importance. And let me briefly present you the main fields of our research, molecular radiobiology. So the DNA foci detection method was established and successfully used in our lab recent years. So it based on the fluorescent labeling of the proteins which involve in the repair of the most severe radiation-induced DNA damage, double-strand breaks. It allows visualization of the repair process, its intensity and kinetic. Particularly the clustered damage which produced in DNA by highly T particle radiation. The research was done using normal human cell lines of different origin, and the main future topics are to evaluate the DNA damage and repair features in tumor cell lines, and especially in radio-resistant ones, in animal experiments in the brain structures in vivo, and in different neural cells, so stem cells, neural, Mathieu neurons, and glial cells. And also to estimate the contribution of different repair pathways in the repair of cluster DNA damage which is produced by densely ionizing radiation. The next level of cell organization as well as our research is cytogenetic. So the non-repaired or misrepaired double-strand breaks can be detected as a structural rearrangements of chromosomes called aberrations. And the chromosome aberrations are regarded as the most sensitive biomarker of radiation exposure. So previously, the cytogenetic methods were widely used in our lab to estimate the biological efficiency of all particle beams which produced at our facilities. And now we have the new powerful method which allow identification of each pair of this is human and animal chromosomes, and detection of all possible rearrangement between them, including complex aberration, which involves three and more chromosomes, which was undetectable earlier, and now is considered as a marker of densely ionizing radiation. So we also can detect translocations, inheritable transmissible aberrations, which can persist long time after radiation exposure in the progeny of irradiated cells, being potential trigger of carcinogenesis. So the main two fields are the complex aberrations, which really lead to revision of previously obtained data, and long-term consequences of radiation exposure. Next level is tissue and organismal level, radiation physiology. These studies are of really extremely important for the radiation risk estimation. The experiments at the beginning of the century demonstrated the very high radio sensitivity of the central nervous system. Even low doses of high LT particles produce the long-term cognitive deficit in the animals. And this makes really doubtful the successful Martian mission completion, for example. And due to this fact, the risk concept is changing nowadays. Half a year before, the carcinogenesis, the probability of cancer progression, was considered as the most severe consequence of radiation exposure and may risk to astronauts. And now the damage to central nervous system come to the foreground and also in our research. So we plan to perform the large-scale animal experiments to evaluate the damage to central nervous system. First of all, it's pathomorphological studies, so this in all brain structures. Also with the use of modern immunohistochemical methods. It's behavioral studies, so we have the special cages to test the memory, the spatial orientation of the irradiated animals, etc. And these two are indispensable part of any animal study. And of course, the search for the radio protectors, which can prevent or improve the so the damage. And also we have some nice ideas and plan to develop about the mechanisms of the central nervous system radiation damage. First of all, recently the neurogenesis was discovered. So the proliferation of neural stem cells in the definite zones of brain, the production of constant production of new neurons, which migrate to the different part of the brains and replace the old or damaged neurons. And the radiation exposure of this very radiosensitive proliferating cells lead to the irreversible impairment of the cognitive functions. And second interesting discovery is the vital role of glial cells, which surround neurons. First of all, part of the cells, the microglia, they cause in response to radiation, provoke the chronic neuroinflammation, which also lead to the cognitive deficit. And second, the possible reason is the demyelination. So it's destruction of the axons, myelin sheaths, which produced by other glial cells, oligodendrocytes, which die in response to radiation. So, by the way, both these mechanisms are involved in many neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer, Parkinson, multiple sclerosis. So, you see, it's not only the problem of radiation biology. And we plan to contribute to both the directions. And, of course, our top priority research is unique monkey irradiation, which these experiments will be continued in collaboration with the leading experts in this field, Institute of the Medical Biomedical Problems of Medical Primatology, Institute of High Nervous Activity, and Moscow State University. And the main goal is to model the human ability to perform under radiation exposure, no, particularly during the deep space flights. And the main future topics of these experiments to evaluate the cognitive, behavioral, and physiological damage which produced by, first of all, heavy charged particles, mainly carbon and iron, which are presented in galactic cosmic rays. And second, during deep space flight simulation. So it means chronic gamma radiation combined with the periodic ion beams and hypokinesia. And of course, so search for the radio protectors, which can prevent or reduce the radiation-induced damage of CNS. Radiation medicine. This is an excellent outcome of our fundamental research. So recently, the new method for increasing the biological efficiency of ionizing radiation, particularly proton beams, was invented, and recently you've heard today, patented by our lab. So the pronounced increase in the DNA damage observed after medical therapeutic beam irradiation of human cultured cells in the presence of the special drugs, they are DNA synthesis inhibitors. And you see, so, and what is most important now was also mentioned today, the preclinical studies with transplanted tumors are now in progress. And of course, in the case of success, also the clinical trial is planned. Mathematical modeling, of course, to explain and predict the results of the radiobiological experiments. So the main goal is to develop the hierarchy of models to systemize the results of the experimental work, and also to develop the to search for the pathways how the radiation-induced pathologies develop at different organization levels, starting from molecule up to cell populations and in time scale, acute and long-term consequences. To do this, the novel for traditional theoretical radiation biology methods are applied, like molecular dynamics or neural network modeling. If you see the list of the main topics, they cover all the fields I showed you before. New branch of our research, astrobiology. So in the collaboration with Italian colleagues recently, for the first time, the synthesis of prebiotic compounds, you see, so a lot, the list was very big, the nucleosides, sugars, amino acids, carboxylic acids, was synthesized from formamide plus meteorite matter system under particle exposure, proton or carbon ions. And now we have the excellent continuation of this project. So the last publication, some ways are found how from these prebiotic compounds, the more complex, like nucleotides, which are already elements of DNA and RNA, and oligo and polymer biomolecules can be assembled. And the second branch of their research is the quest for life in the universe, the study of organic matter and biofossils in meteorites. Radiation research is also very important, so our specialists contribute a lot to the radiation protection management and shielding at new facilities. Now, of course, it's NICA. They developed the neutron spectrometry in wide range. And the other interesting field is nuclear planetology. Nuclear planetology science instruments for space are designed in our lab in collaboration, first of all, with Frank Laboratory, with Roscosmos, NASA, and ESA. So the most ambitious task is quest for life in the solar system. And NASA's principle is follow the water, therefore, so our home design neutron and gamma ray spectrometers were and presently are on board of many international space missions. And finally, our lab designed and built the facility for the testing nuclear planetology instruments here in collaboration with Moscow Space Research Institute. There's a couple of words about infrastructure. So we plan to purchase the next year's the following equipment, which really can improve our research, and this is below $2 million. The sources of ionic radiation which we use and plan to do, it's mainly FluoroFlap U400M accelerator with light ions up to energy 50 MeV per nucleon. Nucleotron accelerator, we use carbon beams and single exposure of krypton. Dzhilepov laboratory, medical technical complex, proton beams. And in the future, after NICA construction completion, we strongly hope to have iron and other ions with the energies up to 50 MeV per nucleon. And so the last education, more than 20 years, our Department of Biophysics at Dubna State University preparing the highly skilled specialists of different levels, and most of them, a lot of them, join our lab. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Yelena, for this high-impact presentation. Please, questions?
It's mainly a comment. I see a huge potential collaboration between GNR, I mean your group, mm-hmm. your lab, and Itamba Lab, because in South Africa, at Itamba Lab, we have this long tradition of radiation biophysics, mm-hmm. and I know we have already very active collaboration, but I think we should base our collaboration, exactly. South Africa, GNR, mm-hmm. more on this type of research, because we can build on successes, and we have successes as you do have. So just a comment about it.
Yeah. You are welcome.
Thank you. Some other questions? Please, Ivan.
Let me elaborate a little bit. In this institute, it appears that at least some of the projects are more than just the projects of the institute. They are projects that involve a lot of people from other places due to the unique facilities here, right? So in the field of biology, radiobiology, it appears that similar situation happens. So my question is, in the long run, what is the community you foresee around the lab here, mm-hmm. around the institute?
Okay, so I told you already, you mentioned today about the collaboration with the leading institutes in the field of space radiobiology, so mainly Institute of Biomedical Problems, which deal with all the animals experiment in space, with astronauts, all. And this is our long-term collaboration. And recently, also in Germany, so in May of this year, the International Biophysics Collaboration was created at GSI, by Marco Durante and leading scientists. And we joined this collaboration. And of course, I think, this will be essential part of our international collaborative work.
Please.
In the NICA project, there is a special innovation block we plan to deliver beams of heavy iron, such as you mentioned. What do you plan to do with them? Are you going to use them at all? I didn't
this is
see
our
anything
greatest
on your,
hope.
I didn't see anything on your transparency.
No, no, I told you so that it was already done because these beams we need really urgently for animal experiments, you see. So because in Flora lab there is no possibility because of the low energy of the science to irradiate so even small laboratory animals. And the only possibility what we can do for this highly T particle, it's a nucleotron. So protons, proton beams we use in Gelepov lab, and the only other possibility is to use this nucleotron beams.
I'd say that your laboratory illustrates very nicely the synergies that may exist inside GNR between laboratories. Mm-hmm. So this is a tendency which should be enhanced in the future, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think this is indispensable part of any big nuclear physics center to have such a division which really so studying the biological efficiency of beams which are produced on the facilities.
Yeah. I see no other questions. Thank you. The next speaker is Nikolai Vojtishin from Information Technology Laboratory. Please.
Hello, dear audience. It's my pleasure to present the strategy of the information technology developments at GNR, and I do this on behalf of the, of course, GNR strategy committee and our laboratory strategy group, which I'm a part of. So I would like to start with the work in an experts group. It consists of international group, which has many experts from the IT world, which are well known in the entire world and represent different centers such as CERN, BNL, DAISY, and other universities and computing centers. And there is also a numerous local group, and only a part of it is presented on the slide. And these groups are always interacting, and they have fruitful discussions and experience exchange, and these all are held within conferences, numerous workshops, and seminars at GNR and worldwide. GNR is a part of the worldwide LHC computing grid. Actually, there are more than 170 sites covering more than 40 countries all around the world, and GNR, over more than 15 years, became one of the most significant members of WLCG project. This significance is due not only to the resources that our Tier 1 and Tier 2 centers are giving, but also by the active participation of our GNR experts in the research and development of solutions of the numerous arising problems in the framework of WLCG. The experience and the knowledge that we obtained gives us the possibility to apply it for our own projects, such as NICA Megascience project. So here on this slide, I would like to present you its computing concept and the challenges that we are facing. As the input, we'll have the data from the accelerator facilities and the experimental setups. The data flow will go through to the NICA online cluster. Afterwards, it will be spread through to a distributed NICA offline cluster, which actually will consist out of three offline clusters. First one is to be built at the NICA center. The second one will be situated at the Laboratory of High Energy Physics, and the work of its development already started. And the third one will be situated in our laboratory and will comprise all the computing nodes and the computing resources that we have in order to fulfill the needs of NICA experiment. Actually, multiple tasks are already performed at our cluster, such as latest QCD calculations. It's noteworthy to mention that more than 60% of the tasks that are run on the government supercomputer are related to QCD calculations for NICA. Simulation and event reconstruction can also be run at any type of resources that our multifunctional information computing complex can give. And of course, as the final result of any experiment is the data analysis of the gathered experimental data. All these offline clusters should be able to be accessed from the outside by all the participants of the worldwide NICA collaboration. Also, I would like to mention that all the nodes on this chart are designed to be connected by at least 400 gigabits per second network links. And actually, the work of the connection between LIT and LHEP offline clusters was already been done. And the 400 gigabit per second link is already established between these two offline sites. GNR neutrino program is also evolving. GNR scientists become part of, start to participate in more and more neutrino experiments. These experiments have many unsolved issues regarding computing and data handling problems. And that's why it was decided to join forces between the Laboratory of Information Technologies and Gelepov Laboratory of Nuclear Problems in order to develop a joint computing platform for the neutrino experiments, which is meant to solve most of the addressed problems and to unify this computing flow for these experiments. For the next 10 to 15 years, the biggest challenge for the worldwide IT community is to come up with some solutions of handling big amounts of data that are to be recorded. So there was already estimated that the annual production flows has an exponential, follows an exponential law. In 2020, more than 40 zettabytes of data will be created worldwide. In physical experiments, there are also such examples. For example, the Square Kilometer Array Telescope, which is estimated to give more than 1 exabyte per year of data. There are also our well-known CERN LHC experiments, which generate more than 20 petabytes per year. And we actually already have more than 200 petabytes stored on our tier ones long-term storage. And of course, we have our home MegaScience project NICO, which will deliver big amounts of data from gold-gold collisions. The solution of these challenges will be for sure a complex one, including in itself approaches and ideas from different fields of the IT world, such as machine learning, data simulation, data analysis and interpretation, many others. Actually, there are two major problems in this challenge. First of them is the handling and managing the big amounts of data that are to be recorded. So for solving this problem, EU Data Lake project was initiated. And GNR is an active participant of this project. We already deployed the data lake at GNR. It successfully integrated into the multifunctional information computing complex structure, comprising all of its components. It already showed great performance for storing and access big arrays of data, but this is only a prototype and there is still a lot of work to do until we switch to a full-scale system. The second problem are the CPU resources. If we stick, it was actually estimated that if we stick to the present flat budget idea, by the high luminosity LHC period, we will be actually 5 times behind in CPU resources. Now, One of the main trends in the evolving, which is evolving now, is the use of high-performance computing for the needs of experimental data processing. At GNR, we have the hyper-elite heterogeneous platform, including the Governance supercomputer, which is a unique heterogeneous system which with a peak performance of 500 teraflops for double precision operations. It contains both CPUs and GPU components, and it also includes multiple top-level solutions in terms of energy, cooling, and power density. It is already planned an annual increase by 90 teraflops for double precision operation for both CPU and GPU components. So now let me go through the main topics that we address in our long-term concept of the IT development at GNR. So first are the telecommunication technologies, including terabit networks, new types of networks such as on-demand networks, software-defined networks, and networks that allow to allocate dynamically the resources that are needed, networks that enable large amount of data transfers, and networks that can process in a distributed way exabyte data volumes. Of course, we have computing systems such as distributed software computing platform, HPC, grid and cloud, and maybe almost each month or each 2 months there are new computing architectures and applications are developed, and it's our duty to effectively use and apply them to the components that we already have in our computing system. Algorithms and software developments will remain one of our main activities. We will strive to solve complex computing problems, to develop and apply machine learning techniques and data mining algorithms and quantum computing algorithms. The big data volumes require developments of new technologies for its processing and analysis. That's why such as the computing with the use of supercomputers, the processing of multidimensional data of huge volumes, big data analysis and processing, artificial intelligence and robotics, and the modeling of computing architectures and workflows. And the last but not the least to be mentioned in this row is the information security. When you have lots of information and data, there will always be someone that is willing to unauthorized access it or corrupt it. So it's our duty to preserve it. In order to do that, we should use new security paradigms, including quantum cryptography and neurocognitive principles. And we should always keep our tools for and software systems for data information protection new and up to date. The completion of this plan, the fulfillment actually of this strategy, will be impossible without having high qualified specialists at our disposal. That is why a system for training and retraining of IT specialists is developed. We held training courses, tutorials, and lectures, and there are two main groups that are doing that. We have our local hyper-elite group, which consists of leading scientists from GNR and its member states, and also we have an international groups which is represented by lecturers and leading scientists from leading manufacturers and IT companies that give lectures and tutorials on different fields, such as parallel programming, tools for debugging. We teach how to work with most common applied software packages. And also we have a framework and tools built in our complex in order to be used for machine learning and deep learning developments and training. These trainings are held, carried out within different activities, such as the activities organized by GNR University Centers. We do tutorials and trainings at the conference and schools organized by GNR. And all, of course, we go to the member state, we visit member states, institutes, and universities and do tutorials and training courses there also. And to conclude my talk, I would like to mention that our main goal is to develop an expandable, dynamically evolving, worldwide, dynamically evolving IT ecosystem that combines a variety of technological solutions, state-of-art computing concepts, and methodologies. Its main purpose is to serve for significant reduction of time spent by the for the implementation of projects that require computing resources and IT expertise. And the beneficiaries of this, of course, should be GNR, its member states, and international collaborators. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, remark, please? Horst?
Should CUDA and NVIDIA processors in your talk, are you also using this for AI methods or machine learning and stuff like that?
Of course. Actually, the nodes that we have, the Volta, these Volta units, they have built-in applications for machine learning and deep learning, and this is actually, this framework is based on the resources of the Hybrid GPU platform, which contains all these tools.
So how many GPUs do you now presently have in operation? GPUs?
40 units.
Thank you.
I see no other questions. Please, Stanislav.
Please be so kind and give me a chance to comment the first report shortly, dedicated to on long-term plans dedicated to particle physics, neutrino physics, astrophysics, etc., which refers specifically also on astroparticle physics. First of all, I would like to remind that using balloon experiments in higher atmosphere last year was just 100 years ago when Victor Hess discovered a cosmic rays. It seems to me that just now is the right time to follow way of Hess and go further in astroparticle physics into open space where the constraints caused by the atmosphere and the Earth's magnetic field disappear. I mention this because within a few years, the possibility to send particle detectors into open space is becoming more and more realistic. So why not to include the possibility to realize particle experiments in open space also in the long-term GenETherms plans? By the way, it would have also practical advantages since accelerators in space looks that they work reliably without any needs of their maintenance. But moreover, I remember that a few years ago, Professor Kreiner said at our boarding meeting, if our effort is to find exotic hypothetical particles, then they will be in space, supposing they exist. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for this remark. Let me tell you that the head committee of this strategic plan will have a meeting this evening from 6 to 7:30. And please, because this session was rather short in time, and I feel that there are many non-asked questions and suggestions, please give your suggestions and comments to this committee, which is meeting under the presidency of Boris Sharkov, our deputy director. And also, don't forget that you have access to all these documents on Indico if you want to send your opinions later on. You have to say something, Michel, please.
Yes, since we are coming to general comments, I would like to ask a question. How do you plan to integrate all these presentations in a single document which can show what are the what is the strategy, what are the flagship priorities and the flagship partnerships. How do you plan to do that?
This is a good question that Boris will answer.
There is an editorial board established, which is busy with integration of the whole contribution of subgroups. And the whole procedural timeline looks like that today we had a presentation by the representative of subgroups. Tonight there will be a meeting of the upper working group, which after that the recommendation of the scientific council and of the working group would be integrated by the editorial board. Then we are obliged to bring the draft of the document to the attention of the scientific technical committee of GNR. Afterwards, the status report will be delivered to the Committee of Planet Potential. After that, the final integration and final text editing will be done by editorial board and presented to the next meeting of Scientific Council. If I hope it will be approved by Scientific Council, it will go to the Committee of the Planet Potential in March for the final approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Before moving to the last... Faisal, please.
Yeah, we are in general comment, aren't we? General comment about... Yeah. Colleagues, I don't know if you share my view on implementing a vision. I mean, the most difficult part is not only having a vision or even obtaining the funding. The most important part is human capital. So my question is, do we have the human capital to implement our vision? This one, we have others in other place. That's the question I'm asking. And I would like to have a proposition for GNR, for the director. In our field, we see the young people not being attracted anymore. We are not 50 or 100 years ago. My suggestion is that GNR, and we mentioned this was the second presentation, I think, GNR should try to see with the member state how to have an ambitious action with universities all over the countries, the member state. We need, I don't have it concretely, but I think it has. We have to pay attention to this particular thing. We need to try to attract in every university in member state the best student and attract them with high-level bursary and get them into our field. Otherwise, we will not have the people to get the science output that we are looking for through all these costly projects. Not only we cannot have the people to explore it, but we will have difficulty building them. So my message is, can we pay attention now to the human capital development at universities everywhere at member state with a global initiative, an ambitious initiative? That's my comment to the vision for the future.
Thank you for your pertinent observation. Boris will answer to your question.
Thank you. It's absolutely the issue of paramount importance for the whole field and not only for our institute. I have to inform the members of the Scientific Council that every subgroup has to present their vision and in their final document their strategy for human resources development of that. Moreover, in parallel to the scientific subgroups, there is the committee or this subcommittee of our strategy group for development of the GNR as international intergovernmental organization, and there is a subgroup dedicated for human resource development, and they are working on that, and the results of their work will be presented to the Scientific Council and Committee of Potential as well.
Thank you. Before moving to the last point of our agenda of this morning, first I'd like to apologize to Vladimir Kekelize for the overtiming and asking kindly you to try to shorten the ceremony at the Very good. Thank you. Thank you. One last point. I give the floor to our director for some important communication.
Dear colleagues, I ask Yevgeny Krasavin coming to this place because I have, please come, because I have announced that we are asked to give a special honorary doctor degree diploma to Yevgeny Alexandrovich Krasavin from National University of Mongolia School of Arts and Sciences, certificate of Doctor Honoris Causa. In pursuance of resolution of the Academic Council of the School of Art and Sciences, National University of Mongolia, be it known that Professor Doctor of Science Yevgeny Alexandrovich Krasavin has been admitted to the title of Doctor Honoris Causa for his outstanding contribution as Mongolia's representative at GNR for decades to development of the education in the field of radiation biology and nuclear physics, research and preparation of young generation of experts, and to significant support for development and contribution of building research team in Mongolia. Your distinctive efforts and contributions will always be recognized and honored by the National University of Mongolia. Given sign at the Ulaanbaatar, Professor Zaya Bata, Dean of the School of Art and Sciences, National University of Mongolia. Let me to give it to you.
So we will move now by bus to the other side, and we will be guided by Vladimir Kekelize during this visit. Please follow him.
To the bus. To Dnika. 40 minutes.